This is Mark Strassman, reporter with Broadband Over Powerline World. We're about to speak to Michael Bates, who's the Vice President, Sales and Marketing at Broadband Horizons, a pioneer in this area. Welcome to Broadband Over Powerline World.
Thank you, Mark.
How old a company is Broadband Horizons?
Broadband Horizons is a spinoff of a wireless internet service business that's been in the rural markets in Texas since 96. The spinoff Broadband Horizons has been in existence since early this year.
Okay, so the obvious question is, what made you switch from wireless to broadband over power line?
That's a great question, and that's exactly why we spun off Broadband Horizons, because our primary market is small to medium-sized communities, and we've been trying to solve the solution of bringing broadband to these communities for some time.
And what kind of problems were you running into with wireless?
There's a couple of problems. One is the barrier of entry is fairly high. When a consumer has to purchase radios and antennas to attach to his home to pick up the signal, the cost of entry can get anywhere up to, you know, $500-$600.
Even if these are people who are used to using equipment as rural folk, they might find the expense the problem.
Yes, and I think the monthly subscription fees are also fairly expensive. And so if you got a dial-up account, you're used to paying maybe $20 a month with an extra phone line, and then you're trying to bump that up to, you know, $50 a month, that raises the barrier to entry as well. So
okay.
That was one of the challenges that we had. And then just in general, the technology, there's line-of-sight issues and cost for the community issues that we were facing. Now, it's not to say that wireless is not a good solution. It certainly has its spot. But once we started to learn about the advantages of broadband over power line, we felt like we needed to provide that solution for some of these communities.
Okay. How exactly did you start finding out about broadband over power line? How did word get to you?
Well, one of the co-founders, Bobby Mack, who was the owner of Momentum Online, the wireless internet service company that I mentioned previously, learned about it through basically through the Manassas Project, and went to Manassas back in February of this year.
Say a little bit more about the Manassas Project.
The Manassas Project is the first commercial deployment, at least the first commercial deployment that I'm aware of broadband over power line. It's been, I believe they had a pilot project for about a year before they launched it in February, and they have been, from what I understand, fairly aggressive in picking up new subscribers in that project using broadband over power line technology. That's the first one that I know of. I know since then there's been several others.
That's in Virginia, right?
Yeah, Manassas, Virginia, and it's the city of Manassas is a partner there with, I think it's a partnership with the manufacturer of the equipment as well as an internet service provider.
Okay.
And they've been, I think they've been very happy with the take-up rates, and they certainly have been very happy with the technology itself.
Okay, and so you learned about it there, and then what kind of decisions did you have to make to decide to get into the business yourself?
Well, we spent quite a bit of time after that trip to Manassas learning about the actual technology, interviewing equipment manufacturers and interviewing users and talking to cities about, you know, the kind of the terms of a deal that we might be able to strike. And spent quite a bit of time, I'd say 3 or 4 months, working on that side of it before we were ready to go out and start meeting with potential customers.
Okay, so at that point, based on what you did then, try to summarize for our listeners the technology, how broadband over power line works, how it differs from wireless or DSL or cable modems, and how it's similar, and how it delivers the broadband signal both ways to the end users.
Okay. The first step, and this is also probably the largest benefit of broadband over power line, is working with the utility company in the community, whether it's investor-owned or co-op.
That doesn't matter. Co-op, investor-owned,
it doesn't matter.
Municipally-owned.
So whoever basically can control the electric grid.
Right.
We sit down with them and work up a design process that really converts that grid into a high-speed data network. And to do that, at points along the grid, you place something that we call a concentrator unit.
Right.
And the concentrator unit is where you collect the internet signal, or you bring the internet signal to the concentrator unit, and then you go down the grid with repeaters. Now, the repeaters boost the signal and take it down the line. And depending on which equipment you're using, you can create a cell going from the concentrator unit in every direction with repeaters, and end up with, you know, and possibly going maybe half a mile in between transformers. In some cases, that's every transformer.
Okay, what's the general density that these concentrators and repeaters have to be placed in?
Well, I would say an ideal business model would be a community with an average of, say, 5 to 6 meters per transformer. But we're working in communities that are, that in some cases there's 1 meter per transformer.
Right.
So the economics work best when you're, you know, 4 or 5, but it can work in communities much smaller than that.
Okay.
So then once the signal is then distributed across the grid, it gets into the home on the low voltage side via a modem that the consumer would get and actually plug into his electric outlet.
So essentially in the home there's something that looks just like a regular toaster or radio plug that goes into the wall.
Yes.
And then that goes into a modem, and then a universal standard bus comes out the other end?
It's an Ethernet connection that goes into the computer.
Okay.
From the modem. And the modem is the only piece the consumer needs, and it's about the size of it's like a cable modem, basically.
And how much does it cost, about?
Well, it depends on the type of arrangement that that we strike with the city. Now, the city, in some cases, the city wants to be the Internet service provider.
Right.
And they're just buying the equipment, and then they market that to the consumers. In some cases, maybe there's a setup fee that covers the cost of the modem. Sometimes there's not. So it all really depends on the provider's role.
Okay.
If we were the Internet service provider, we traditionally would charge a small setup fee.
Right.
And rates as low as $29 a month for the service.
And this $29 a month, what are the bandwidths available?
Yeah, that also depends on the equipment that you're using.
Right.
The lowest that we've seen would get speeds up to 512 kb to the home.
Right.
And we've seen some that are burstable up to 6 to 8 megs.
Okay.
So there's a pretty wide range. But
okay.
It's DSL or better speeds.
And that's in both directions?
Yes, sir.
And where does the power to push them back up the line come from? Or is the power in the line? Or?
Well, I'm not sure I understand the question. So the signal itself really rides the grid using the wire as an antenna.
Okay.
So it's not actually being pushed along with the power. It's just, like I said, the repeaters send the signal down around, like an antenna.
Right.
Down to the next transformer.
So are these waves?
It's almost like wireless, but it's being directed via the line.
It's kind of focused wireless through the.
Excuse me?
It's kind of focused wireless.
That's it. That's a great way. It's an RF signal, basically.
Okay. Is it traveling? Let's get into the physics. Is it traveling as electrons or as radio waves?
It's radio waves.
Okay.
It's similar to all the other broadband technologies. You're talking to somebody that's not an engineer.
Well,
so I'm not going to be able to give you engineering responses.
Right.
From what I understand it, cable and
DSL
via copper wires, or there are RF signals riding that medium, if you will.
So they're sort of focused wireless, too.
Yes.
Wireless in the sense of radio frequency transmissions.
That's exactly right.
I see. Okay.
And VPL is the same.
Right.
Same technology, except we're using the electric grid in this case.
So really, all three of those, cable, DSL, and VPL, are really radio waves going through wires.
That's exactly right.
And it's just
cable is fiber optic.
Fiber optic, okay, right, a wire, but a conduit. But again, it's a signal. I thought there were photons going through the fiber optic.
Now that may be the case.
Rather than a radio signal.
Yeah.
But in the other three, anything that uses copper, anything that uses electrical conductor, it's a radio frequency signal going through them.
Going through the wire.
Going through the wire. Okay. So why were these wires hanging out here for so long and nobody figured out how to do this before?
I think there's a couple of issues. I think the first one is the radio interference issue. The first high-speed, if you will, broadband over power line solutions were emitting harmful interference that interfered in the 2 to 20 megahertz range.
And who was using that?
That's mostly, I think there's a couple of channels in there that amateur radio uses.
Okay.
And I believe that, to me, that would probably be the number one issue that was not resolved and why it had not reached its introductory point in the United States.
Okay, now the FCC got into this recently and issued some statements in October, some guidelines in October, right?
Yes.
And what was the importance of, what did they say and what was the importance of that?
Well, what they said basically was that they believed in broadband over power line as a technology that will foster competition. They made statements like this is the third platform and, you know, adding a third platform is going to improve the economies of these types of technologies.
Right.
They recognized that BPL has the potential of emitting harmful interference, and they set out some rules on how to deploy BPL network to avoid the interference issues, which our company has been doing from the very beginning, even before the FCC ruling. We knew there was an issue. The equipment manufacturers that we use, they have technology embedded that enables us to avoid that interference, and there's several different ways to do it.
How do you do that?
Well, one of them, so I mentioned to you before about the basic design criteria,
right,
where you've got a concentrator unit and then you have to put in repeaters, and the reason you have to put in repeaters is because you're broadcasting at a certain power. If you really amp the power up, you wouldn't need so many repeaters.
Right.
But the problem there is you're interfering, so
right,
we start by emitting at a low power. And we can control the power remotely via the software, so that if we find that there is a possibly maybe a ham radio station that is being interfered, we can go in and lower
right
the power at that installation, and we can also notch out specific signals, so we can find out where that ham radio operator is broadcasting, and we'll go notch that signal out so that we mitigate that issue.
Notch out means you stop broadcasting at that frequency.
Oh yes. So we're not interfering with that
right
installation.
And the basic solution here is, you're saying if you were broadcasting at a higher, with more power, it would set up these dangerous signals for these other users. So the solution is to broadcast at a lower power level, but put in more repeaters so that the signal sort of sneaks through and doesn't bother anybody.
That's exactly right. Plus the ability to go in and actually carve out a signal if it is interfering with a certain installation. So now those were addressed in the FCC ruling, and as I mentioned, we've been doing that from the very beginning.
Okay.
All of our pilot projects.
Have you had much problem with that in practice?
Not yet. We have not had a problem, and I don't believe in Manassas they've had a problem. In the other commercial deployments, there may have been a couple that have had issues, but they are not operating any longer.
Is there also kind of a sociological element that allows you to set up some ongoing relationship with the ham operator association in the area so that you can be talking to each other about this?
Definitely. I mean, we do that and plan to do it in every community that we work with before we ever deploy the system, notify the local community that it's going to be deployed, and inviting all of the ham radio operators to come in and help us during the design process.
Right.
So that if there are installations, we're working around it from the very beginning. We'd rather address it in the beginning then address it after it's been installed.
Okay. Now, are there other? Now, I don't want to get into the whole argument about power line health risks, but is there an added risk by putting internet through power lines whatever the existing risks are now?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
And I'm not even that familiar. I mean, I'm vaguely familiar with discussions about power line magnetic fields and those kind of things, but
right,
I'm not versed on that at all.
Now, based on that, in some places, I think they put power lines underground. Does this system work equally well with underground power lines as overhead power lines?
Yes, it does. Actually, it performs a little bit better because there's less interference being underground.
Right.
And which means you put in less repeaters.
Okay.
Underground to
right
reach the signal. So it performs better, actually.
Okay. So I think this is something of an incentive for new power lines, or even for the repositioning of old power lines, that if this generates more revenue for the utility company, they might even have an incentive to for aesthetics or for what you just mentioned, efficiency, mm-hmm, to underground some of their power lines.
Yeah, I would agree about it. There's a bigger incentive for utility companies to deploy this technology underground or overhead, and that's the benefit that you get from converting your grid to a data network. things like automatic meter reading are enabled, collection of this data from the consumer side and then using it for load management, demand management. You can do automatic disconnects. One of the communities that we work with has a large student population, and the students move, you know, twice a year.
Right.
And there's a high cost for that utility to support the disconnects and reconnects for that population. So
right.
With this system, they can set it up in a way that collects the data, and they can disconnect remotely and save significant money doing it that way.
They don't have, as they say, have to roll anything to take care of it.
Exactly. So there's a lot of cost savings that a utility can realize with this. Now, this is just the network. It's
right.
Not the hardware.
Right.
But once you've got, the network is probably the most complex piece. Once you have that in place, the utility companies then can start working towards, you know, collecting the data and using it in different ways.
So even if the company, if the utility company didn't want to offer internet service, they could convert. They could use a lot of this technology to convert their own system to a smart network that would give them cost savings.
Exactly right.
And but then after they've done that, they might want to then offer the capability of the system to other people and amortize their costs over a broader base and make some more money that way.
That's exactly right.
Does,
I mean, the real benefit for the internet access fees, if you're a utility, is there some potential revenues that you can generate to offset the cost of converting your grid over.
So, in fact, it's almost found money once they've converted it over for themselves. Or is it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, the incremental costs to provide it then are not so great.
Yes, exactly right. So there's different payouts depending on the size of the community and the density of the community and what they intend to use the network for. And there's lots of different variables, obviously.
Okay.
But in a lot of cases, you can see a 3 to 5 year payout with a BPL network.
Meaning they pretty much recoup their costs in 3 to 5 years?
Yes.
Okay. Now, one last technical question. Does doing this over the network degrade the quality or of the electricity delivered?
It has no effect.
Okay.
It has no effect on the quality of service.
Okay.
Electricity.
All right. So much for the technology here. Let's talk a little bit about the business side of all this.
Okay.
What kind of arrangements in general are available between what your company, what Broadband Horizons offers, and whether you, and when you work with a utility or power company or municipality, what kind of structures are in general possible, and what are you finding that you're doing in practice?
I'd say the way I answer that is there's a whole spectrum, and all the way from the utility purchasing the equipment, installing the equipment, setting themselves up as an internet service provider, doing all the customer service, field service, et cetera, et cetera.
And what do you, in that case, what do you do with
that? In that case, we're more of an integrator
okay.
or a consultant. We're walking them through, helping them through the process based on our experience.
Or they sort of, could it be fair to say they outsource the creation of the network to you and then you turn it over to them?
Yes. That's a very fair way of putting it. In some cases, I mean, the larger utilities have, you know, resources to be able to do this.
Right.
And they would just be calling upon us for our experience and assistance with deploying the network. That'd be on the one end of the spectrum.
Okay.
The other end of the spectrum would be where our company or a company like ours would go in and finance the entire conversion and operate and maintain it via a long-term contractual relationship with that utility. And
right.
In exchange, the utility would get maybe a franchise fees or some sort of an override for the use of their grid.
A little bit on the model of a cable TV franchise.
Yes, sir. Very,
okay.
Very similar to that.
Okay. So now,
That's option number two, I guess. And those are the two far ends of the spectrum. But what we're finding out, and I think it's primarily because our target market is, you know, small to medium-sized communities, is that they are interested in purchasing the equipment and converting their grid at the pole level back to the substation.
Right.
And having a company like Broadband Horizons then to operate and finance from the pole to the home and own that customer relationship and do all the ISP services and the emails and web hosting and those kind of things.
So they'll sort of prep the network to a certain extent and then allow you to come in and sort of finish it.
Yes.
And,
yeah,
and
that's another contractual relationship, and it has, you know, there's performance objectives and, you know, to maintain the relationship, and there's lots of things involved with that, and there's also a revenue share as
right.
well. And when I mentioned the 3 to 5 year payout, that was the type of arrangement that I was talking about. It's So, and then, they, of course, they're using it for their utility services. We're using it for the internet access and business services. And I think it's a very good arrangement.
So, in fact, there are several different models, all of which allow Broadband Horizons to make money and which allow the utility company or the municipality to achieve whatever goals they have in terms of raising money or for themselves, revenues for themselves, or subsidizing a service for their community.
That's exactly right. And every community is different. You know, every community has different flavors of broadband that exist. Some have them. Some have very limited. Some have, you know, more options. Some have already have some of these utility services. So it really all depends on the what services and the objectives are. It also depends on the political climate of those communities. If they, you know, if this is something that they really see as driving their economic development and community development, then, you know, they're going to be more aggressive about, you know, trying to bring these services in.
But in fact, the technology and the business models are flexible enough that you could sort of have an extremely private enterprise oriented place and an extremely community minded place, and the technology would work equally well under different socioeconomic models for both.
That's exactly right, and we really kind of lean more towards the kind of the community driven option.
Right.
I mean, all of these services are branded locally, not necessarily with our name on it.
Right.
And we really prefer it that way, and we prefer that the deal. There's plenty of incentives, you know, so both parties have some skin in the game and they're motivated to make this a successful project.
Okay, let's talk specifically. There's the towns I'd never heard of before, but Blanco, Burnett, and Weimar?
Yeah, it's Blanco. It should be Blanco, but in Texas.
It's Texas, yes, okay.
I did call it Blanco.
Blanco, okay.
Weimar,
right.
Which is a community west of Houston.
Right.
And Burnett, which is a community near Austin. Those are our first pilot projects.
This is not a Tri-Cities area. Those are three separate places.
Communities. And Blanco is actually more of a demonstration project than a pilot.
How did you get connected to them? Did they come to you? Did you go to them?
We went to them, and these are communities that we already had relationships with that were looking for some solutions on the broadband internet access side. They all made sense. And there were probably other pilot projects, communities that were interested, but these were ready to go, and we installed the equipment. They've been up and running for about 3 months now.
Okay.
In both cases, we started with about a 4 or 5 city block area.
I'm sorry, how big?
About a 4 to 5 city block area.
Right.
And in both cases, the point of origin was the city offices, so the city offices are using the service.
Right.
I mean, there are commercial users in both cases. Now, we have fewer residential users in the first deployment. In the case of Burnett, we've expanded to a trial market to a golf course community that's near town, actually still in the city limits, that doesn't have any broadband internet access, and we've deployed it there, and that passes about 200 homes.
Okay, so how many people or how many connections are there in those three towns now?
I would, this is just a guess, totally right. Guess. I would say we've passed about 500 homes total. Okay. 500 meters.
You passed 500 meters?
Yes, sir.
And how many people have signed up?
These are trial markets, so right now they're getting the service for free.
Right.
That's going to change after the first of the year, but again, this is another guess. I'm going to say less than 200.
Okay. Have there been any discussions? Or you know, you said in Burnett there was no other broadband access means.
No, in that community in Burnett, there was no access.
At the Gulf,
in the town of Burnett, the proper.
Oh, okay.
They have DSL and they have limited cable. In both cases, they're limited in service.
And speeds? The DSL and cable were limited how?
Basically in the service area. So they didn't. Both technologies didn't cover the entire town.
So essentially, this brought service options to places that didn't have broadband options before.
Yes.
In places where it did people switch, or they stayed, or they're thinking about it, or how's that working?
Well, because these were pilots and then we weren't charging fees, all of them switched.
Yeah, okay.
Because they didn't have to cancel their other service.
So they still have it?
They still have it, and they're still using it.
Okay.
And after the first of the year, those will change. to commercial deployments, and we began to start a marketing campaign and start signing up new subscribers.
Right.
And I'll be able to give you a better idea of the take-up rate there. And, of course, it's all going to depend community by community based on what's available.
Right.
But our business model, again, if you go back to the one I talked about, the kind of the middle ground, our business model works with as low as a 12% take-up rate. In other words, 12% of the households
right.
Getting the new service.
It's viable if one out of eight people sign up for it.
Yes.
What have been the reactions? Who are the DSL and cable providers there? Are they little local companies? Are they big companies? And how have they been reacting?
Well, I can't say. I mean, from a competitive standpoint, we haven't seen. I mean, it's too early to say.
Right.
Because it's not been deployed commercially.
When you start charging people for it, people are going to have to make decisions about whether they want to drop their DSL and hook up with you or not.
Yes, and it's going to be. I can't. Like I said, all I can tell you is what we've modeled on our business model.
Do you expect that the DSL and cable providers will drastically cut their prices in order to compete? And if they do, what kind of reactions are available for you?
Well, they're already very competitive on the pricing structure.
Right.
And I think we've got some flexibility on our pricing as well.
Right.
But a lot of those decisions will be made in partnership with the community.
Okay.
And I personally think in the communities that we're going to be working in, there's going to be a lot of interest in a service that just requires plugging a modem into an outlet. I think the ease of use is going to help us with our take-up rate. There's no installation, there's no setup, and no calling and waiting on a service technician or anything like that.
And not even registering with a new provider because people are already paying money to the electric company, right?
Exactly.
Okay.
I think that's the other, is that this is a local offering, and I think there's going to be some loyalty there.
Right.
To support your local community.
Okay. Now, how has it been working technically?
It's been working very, very well. And that was, we certainly wanted, we had our own needs for a pilot to make sure that before we rolled it out that it was technically sound.
Right.
Not just to prove to the market, but to prove to ourselves. And we've been very pleased with the technology in general. And we've used a couple of different equipment manufacturers, and both of them have performed very well. We've had very little downtime. The only downtime that we've had has been problems with the actual internet backhaul, or bringing the actual internet to the grid.
Let's talk about that. How are you doing that backhaul?
We do it whatever is the most cost effective.
Right.
And I'm sorry, my battery just beeped, so I hope we can finish before it.
Well, we can stop and you can recharge or something. We can finish. We've got some more things to do here, but
okay. Whatever is the most available. Actually, let me do this. Let's stop the conversation now, and then you can call me right back on my cell phone.
Okay, let me do that. Let me thank you for talking to us so far, and we'll be back in just a little bit here.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye.